Hello and welcome to the Buzzcast. I'm John Adams.
And I'm Andrew James.
And in this eighth episode of the Buzzcast, we've got a few treats for you. Coming up later, we'll be talking about the tricky subject of photographing birds in flight and getting good, well-exposed shots in misty conditions. We'll also have another photo beta tip to get you out of bed early and inspire you into action. But first, well, what's on your mind, Andrew?
So I've got a question, John, that's been on my mind for a little bit, actually, and I've been wondering whether somehow us photographers, particularly travelling photographers, we are some kind of cultural photo thief or thieves. When we go into countries like India or Cuba or Peru or anywhere, frankly, you snap street scenes and take a few portraits of the people you meet, and then you fly out again pretty damn quickly, having done that, having enjoyed yourself, and get back and smugly look at all your lovely photos that you took. But, you know, is that the right thing to do? Is there a reason for me to feel guilty about it or not?
I know what you mean. You kind of swan in, take what you want, swan out again. I suppose in that swanning in and swanning out process, what harm is caused is the first question I'd ask, you know, playing devil's advocate on this, because I do know you mean.
Well, I guess there's no specific harm. I'm not, you know, I personally have a pretty, I'd like to think I have a reasonably ethical approach to photographing people I meet. I mean, I will do candids, so you could argue that either way, but certainly where I'm doing kind of close-up portraits, I will try to have some kind of friendly interaction with them, and clearly if they don't want to be photographed, they can make that known to me, and I will go away. But I guess, you know, I guess when I think about it, you know, I might be particularly in, you know, the countries I mentioned, India and Cuba, where the people I'm photographing on the whole may not have very much in terms of of things, for want of a better term, and there am I with a lens that's worth a couple of thousand pounds or whatever.
This is first world guilt.
Well, it might be. I don't know what it is really, and I hope that I kind of hope I'm not too guilty of doing anything that's awful, and I enjoy it doing it. I enjoy getting really good shots, and I like nice friendly encounters with the people I meet along the way. But I don't know.
Would you have the same kind of guilt, if we can call it guilt or whatever? Would you feel the same if you did it in, say, the village where you live, or in Leicester town centre, or in London?
Probably not. Actually, that's a really good point.
Why not?
Yeah, you put me on the spot there. Well, I think it's that thing that I said, actually. I think it's that case of I live in a, or we all do here, in the privilege of the West, where we take certain things for granted, and then we take some of that privilege with us when we travel.
I guess one way, I mean, I know in places like the popular square in Morocco, where people like the snake charmer guy, they're sort of tourist attractions, and I haven't been to Cuba, but I believe the same with the lady with cigar, and a lot of the people there, they're sort of asking for something in consideration for their time.
But the trouble is, I will actually be avoiding those people, and you know, and that's a really good point
because they're cliched of the area. Yeah.
Exactly. So they're not. I'm not interested in photographing them, so I end up trying to find just people that I meet along the street, and you know, and do I give a tip? Sometimes I do, not always. It depends on, I don't know.
I suppose there's no need to if you're shooting candids.
No, obviously not if I'm shooting candids. Yeah. But I mean, if I've spent a little bit of time with somebody, I might give them a tip in the right circumstances. And I can't tell you what those right circumstances are. It's just whether it feels right or wrong to do it. I don't know. Actually, you can feel this is a genuine one for me, where I'm not sure whether what I'm doing has any impact.
I can see you are genuinely torn about it. Yeah,
I am. And it's become a little bit of a thing of mine to do that kind of photography, and I really enjoy taking people to Cuba, for example, to do the street photography there. And as a rule, particularly in Cuba, I have very rarely found anybody who's, you know, locals who are upset by what we're doing, or quite the reverse often. And I guess you could argue that we're bringing some kind of income into that country, which may in some way filter down. But I'm not convinced that much of it does, because a lot of it goes to the airline, goes to the tour operator. You know, clearly there has to be some local, you know, there's local people, local taxi drivers, local restaurants are benefiting. But are the people we're actually photographing benefiting? I don't know.
I think even if you made a rule of contributing to a local charity in the country you're visiting, again, the chances of that charity money filtering down to the actual people who you've benefited from in taking their picture is unlikely. But it might kind of alleviate Western guilt in that sense. But I think there's the assumption being made here that photography is transactional, and I don't think everyone sees it that way. I mean, if I was sort of walking down the street in London or Cardiff or wherever, and someone came up to me and said, "Oh, can I quickly take your picture?" Because for whatever reason, it's unlikely, admittedly. But
I don't know. You're an attractive man,
as I wander along,
John,
in my native dress, you know, a pair of combats and a t-shirt.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I was going to say you should stop wearing that dress when you're out and about. But you know,
I don't think I'd feel that I should be charging them for it. I'd be intrigued, but I'd probably say, "Yeah, fine, whatever." You know, I wouldn't object to it, and I wouldn't see it as a kind of transactional gesture that, well, if you want to photograph me, you have to pay. I wouldn't feel that way about it. And I wouldn't feel that, you know, I was being culturally invaded in some way either.
No, maybe not.
I think it's that if you swap shoes, you might find it faintly ridiculous that the person photographing you in Stamford would feel any sense of guilt about, you know, stealing the opportunity of getting a shot of you walking down a Lincolnshire town with lots of stone.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm thinking I'm maybe moving away from this kind of idea that it's a guilt about have and have not type of scenario. I think it's more for me. I mean, for example, when I was in Africa, in Central African Republic, I saw some brilliant, the potential to get some amazing portraits, but the culture there was quite different from a Cuba or an India where they weren't really that photo friendly. So the only way to have got photographs there, which would have been awesome if I could have done it, would be to spend some time getting to know those people rather than just doing this flying in and flying out in not in a hurry, but within a time scale, because we all have a time scale. So I think it's more about that, and that, so I'm taking that concept, that thought of actually in terms of places where they're much more culturally relaxed about having their photographs taken and being approached to have their photographs taken. The fact I'm not getting to know them well enough.
This is a bit like the difference between being an outsider journalist and an embedded journalist in those kind of situations, isn't it?
I'm basically looking for a very rich patron to pay for me to go and spend 6 months in Cuba or a year in India or, a couple of years in, Bhutan or something, in order for me to get under the skin of the culture, which I think could help me take better pictures, and maybe I'd feel a greater connection to those people that I'm photographing in a way. You know, I tend to find that in most cases, in fact, I can't think of a case in recent years that hasn't happened. I'm leaving feeling that it was a good encounter. I've smiled, we've nodded, even if we haven't had the same language or not enough, you know, even a few words. It's always been very pleasant and very polite and thank you very much. But maybe I'm feeling that's not enough. Clearly I'm not in a situation where that's ever going to change. Currently, anyway, you know, I'm not a photojournalist as such. So therefore, I don't have that ability to be able to go in and spend quite a while and then get that financially rewarded. Whether actually photojournalists do get those things financially rewarded is another debate for another day, isn't it? I guess. I don't know. It was just one that has been playing on my mind, and it'd be quite interesting to hear what photo buzzers think about it as well, because some of them come and do it with me as well, of course.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what people's thoughts are on it, because I've got three words which are springing to mind, and they're kind of loss, damage and offence. Are you causing any of those three doing what you do as a photographer, or doing what we do as a photographer. This is what we all do.
But I'd hope not, obviously.
I'd hope not, and I'd feel bad if any of us were doing that, if we were causing loss, we're causing damage, or we're causing offence. Clearly, in the individual circumstances that dictate that one of those things is happening, you'd kind of want to not do it or make reparation somehow for it. But I think absent of those three conditions, it's probably fine, and it's maybe us being sensitive, probably. Liberal, Western,
lily-livered,
lightweight, yeah, snowflakes, I think they call them these days.
Oh, okay, a snowflake.
That's... Yeah, it's us worrying too much about it and thinking this has to be, that could be it.
Maybe I just needed you to say that so I just felt better about myself. That's the whole point of this podcast.
But see, I don't know now if I'm defending something that shouldn't be defended.
Oh, great.
So
now I'm like worrying.
So this is where we need the buzzer's contribution, because I don't honestly know, like you, I don't know where I stand on this. I can rationalize it one way or the other, but I don't know if that rationalization is correct.
Hmm.
But it is a really interesting question, and I think something that all photographers need to think about.
Yeah, I think so. And I've now got a new guilt, and that new guilt is the fact that I've created this buzzcast in order to make me feel better about something that I shouldn't feel better. It's just basically laden down with guilt, and I'm not even a Catholic.
Yeah, and you've now burdened me with it, and I wasn't even thinking about this before.
Well, that's
I was wondering
point.
About what I was going to have for tea tonight, and now I'm worrying about whether I'm causing offence and damage to cultures far away. Some of them I haven't even been to. And now I've caused all this.
Well, yeah, that's true. The fact that you've not been to them, but actually I think you are guilty. So do you know what? Because the other guilt I had was the fact that it actually got quite serious, this buzzcast. And because it had got serious, I was feeling guilty that we weren't being light enough, because we like to have a bit of a laugh with it. But now I can actually laugh at the fact that I've passed on my guilt to you, and that you're feeling guilty, and that you may be trying to pass it on to buzzers. So everyone is happy. Well, I'm happy, and everybody else isn't. So I'm okay about that.
And that's your idea of comedy? What? Have you heard of things called knock-knock jokes?
No, try one on me.
Well, now it's time for our Q&A sections, or questions and answers in long form. Andrew, first one, I think this is a good one for you, actually. I've been trying to get good pictures of birds in flight, but nearly all my efforts are blurred. How do I set up my DSLR to get good, sharp shots? Now, that sounds like it's right up your street.
Well, first of all, I hope it's not from somebody who came to the Puffins weekend with us at this point after the event, because those guys hopefully have nailed a few good shots doing exactly this. Okay, so birds in flight are a tricky subject. Why? Because the blinking things do move. So any kind of action photography is always more difficult. So
it's the fact that some birds are quite erratic in their flight as well, and that makes it trickier, doesn't it? Unlike things like a car or a plane, where you can actually track the action quite easily.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You're dealing with, generally, I mean, unless you're doing it at a birds of prey workshop like the one we run, John, you know, generally you don't know where they're going to go. Some birds are quite smooth flyers. Some kind of puffins in particular kind of tend to they look as though they're going in a straight line, but trust me, they're not. They're jagging around all over the place trying to avoid the gulls attacking them for the sand eels, etc. So there's all these different complications added into it, plus of course birds of different sizes, so the smaller bird often the harder it can be to actually get the AF point on somewhere where you want.
Target's going to give a bigger challenge, isn't
it? And they fly at different speeds, and you have birds flying across you, flying to you, and all these things create different challenges. So I'm not going to get necessarily specific on camera type, because we've got buzzers that use all sorts of different cameras and different setups, but generically there's some things that you always need to bear in mind. First of all, shutter speed needs to be fast as you can get it. There is no such thing as a too slow a shutter speed when you're photographing birds in flight. So I would be suggesting that you're looking at around about a 2/1000th of a second or faster if you can get it. You will get away with slower shutter speeds slightly, if depending on the conditions, depending on the bird, etc. So, you know, it's not like you can only go above 2000th of a second.
So to achieve that, you've really got to crank up the ISO then.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, even on a bright sunny day, shooting my 1DX, my default ISO is going to be 800 for birds in flight. That's the default, and some, you know, and often I'll go up to 1600 to get that higher shutter.
So forget about those kind of, you know, fine grain landscape ideas of 100 ISO. It's take it up to kind of 800 or 1600 to make sure you get that fast shutter speed.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have to, drop down to 400. 200, 100. If if it's ridiculously bright and you don't need those things, that's fine. But don't be afraid to go up an ISO. That's something we're always saying, aren't we? So shutter speed. The next thing is focusing. Okay, so this is not an occasion where you're going to be using manual. Let's be honest. You're going to need AF, and you're going to need continuous or AI servo in Canon speak,
or AFC on AFC Nikon speak,
Nikon speak, and whatever AF in Fuji, Sony, Olympus speak that's out there. But you guys know what we're talking about here. So yes, you need to have that switch on. So that means that the camera's continually readjusting itself. Okay, as long as you've got your finger down on the shutter button, and you might need to take it off and dab it back down again to get that, to lock that focus. You can look at, depending on your camera, on the active focus points, and I could talk probably all day about this specific thing, so we're just going to keep it simple for now. What I would suggest in general for birds in flight is that you use a small group of active AF points in the center of your camera. So from a composition point of view, yes, that does mean that your main subject's going to be quite central if you're looking onto the head or the side of the bird in the center, but you can crop later to make it look a little bit more interesting.
I think that's the easiest thing, because keeping a central AF group rather than a single point, keep a group and keep it in the middle, then you can track with the subject, and you're just trying to get the subject in the middle of the viewfinder. And yes, and cropping for composition purposes, do that later, but getting a sharp shot is the intended target, and then cropping later will actually give you the composition you desire. So
yeah, and the thing is, you don't want to be cropping so much out off that you're reducing the size of the image hugely. If you want to print it, it's fine. If you're going to put it something online, you only need 800 pixels across the width anyway. So don't sort of crop ridiculously. But, and actually that's a really good point, is that one of the things I'll do is that I'll pick up, if I'm following a bird, I'll pick it up before I'm going to shoot it. So I'll pick it up, well, it's not tiny in the frame, but still relatively small in the frame, and I'll track with it, obviously. So you're moving, tracking with it. When it gets to about half size in the frame, that's the point I will start shooting. Okay, so there will be a point when it's going to be too big in the frame as well. So you're tracking it through, keeping your tracking steady. This is where a lot of people make the mistake, is that they start panicking, so they're waving the camera and the lens all over the shop,
and
trying to,
then the focus target points are drifting off the subject, and it's snapping to the sky or clouds behind or whatever. And
absolutely, and yes, and obviously if you've got if there's a lot of interest detail behind the bird, I mean, if it's up in the sky, or you've got a coastal scene like on the Farns, where you've got a far distance coast in the mainland, you could actually open up more AF points, to be honest. But in that case, if you're going to have more AF points to try and pick up somewhere on the bird, if you're struggling, then you need an aperture that's going to give you a little bit more leeway in terms of depth of field. So, for that, I'd be shooting something like F8, whereas probably if I've just got a small group, I can get away with F5.6 without too many problems, because I'm trying to get the focus on the head as much as I can, if possible. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, isn't there?
And a high drive mode as well, your high speed of the shutter, yes.
Absolutely.
Or so frame rate.
So in olden days we'd call it motor drive. But it's on continuous, basically. So it's shooting at the fastest possible. But you don't machine gun it. Don't machine gun it. You're tracking the bird through the flight, and then when it's at the right point in the frame, you start shooting. But I tend to do two or three, bang 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 bang, like that, rather than just going. It sounded like a kid then, didn't I? Playing war games. Sorry, yeah.
Just fill a card with one sequence. It is ridiculous. You don't need to do that, but it's short controlled bursts after some tracking. So I'm looking to summarise this because there's a lot of information here.
I've only just started as well. I could literally go on, but you're right. And I think this is a really big subject. So that's what I'm trying to say is that that's just a tiny little part of the things that you need to think about.
Well, I think a good thing is practicing the techniques involved in somewhere that's not so critical as if you're going away on it. You know, obviously go on a workshop with us and that will help you get that.
Good plug.
But the other thing is just go to your local sort of stream or duck pond. If there's ducks around, ducks are great training fodder for doing birds in flight shots. As they're coming into land, if you can see their flight path, it's fairly predictable and you can actually train your lens on them and get some decent shots. So with an hour or two of playing down at the local duck pond or your local stream or river, you can get some good practice in.
I'd say go to somewhere like a nature reserve where you've got swans in particular, because they're bigger birds, so they're much easier target to hit than ducks. Actually, ducks are a bit like puffins, quite fast flyers, so a little bit more tricky. But knowing where they're going to land and thinking about where the wind, you know, they're going to be landing using the wind to help them take off and to land. So it is being aware of how that's going to make a difference to your standing position as well.
Like Andrew and I, if you have a lake with swans in your own garden, then shoot that.
Yes.
If you don't, then you have to use someone else's swans, then
And how is your duck house on the middle of the lake, John? One last thing, because I know we're waffling on a lot about this. One of the hardest things, you know, I'm standing here and I've got a puffin or a bird coming directly towards me, but the camera's not picking it up. That's because that's the hardest position for the camera to understand that there's movement. If you've got something moving across you, across the frame, the camera is much better at realizing there's movement. But when something is coming directly towards you, it's a lot harder. Particularly in those circumstances, what I tend to do is make sure that the lens has not got to hunt too far to find it. So I'll be taking a focus point off maybe if there's some vegetation on the horizon where the window of opportunity to get the photo is.
Something to similar distance.
Similar distance to where the bird will be.
Yes, exactly.
So that it's picking it up quickly there. But yeah, don't be surprised if your results are a little bit tricky on those directly towards you shots, because they look like they should be easier. And one very last thing, which I've just remembered, and that is obviously when you're certain birds will obviously if it's a question of birds landing. That's really when the wings come up and they've put the brakes on, the bird will slow down. That will give you your best opportunity often to get that really nice shot. You'll get all those lovely flight wings that are visible, but it will give you that chance really to get that perfectly sharp shot.
So as it comes in, pulls up, and the bottom of the wing comes forward, that's when you're going to get your sharp shot as the action slows down.
That's it.
Yeah. Summarising that isn't easy, but generally speaking, you need a fast shutter speed first of all. And Andrew's saying around about sort of a thousandth, two thousandth of a second. So that means a high ISO. Then you need to use a small group of AF points. You need to be on AF continuous, or AI servo, the continuous autofocus setting. Use a small group and then track for, say, a second or so as the bird comes into your frame. Hold the button down or halfway down. Track with the bird as it's moving through, and then shoot in short, sharp bursts. And kind of hope for the best. Expect to get some failures within that.
Yeah, I'll absolutely expect to be culling quite a few pictures. Anyway, enough biff, as I like to call it. John, I have a question for you.
Okay.
I was trying to capture a misty morning, and although I got lots of atmosphere, my photos were all quite dark. It was very bright when I was shooting, so I'm not sure where I went wrong. How do I get better results in these kind of conditions?
Misty morning. Within that question, it was bright when I was shooting, so I'm not... How bright it is, how bright the daylight or the weather, or that has no bearing on how your camera is going to record it. The important thing is to work out whether the scene is brighter than average or darker than average. So in many ways, this is kind of a metering question. But when you're faced with mist is a weird sort of freaky condition that's a bit like shooting in snow or on bright white sand, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because what it does, because it's brighter than an average scene, it kind of fools your camera into underexposing a scene. So what you need to do, if it's brighter than normal, is use a bit of exposure compensation. You can use your normal evaluative or honeycomb or matrix metering system, the regular one you normally use, but... I mean, take a test shot, and if it's looking a bit dark, just crank up the exposure compensation and normally try adding a stop and then reshooting and seeing if that looks okay. If it still looks dark, a stop and a half or even two stops. You rarely need to go to two stops, but that kind of area should do the trick.
I think the thing about misty scenes is that they can look fantastic, can't they? Mm. But if they do look dirty, like dirty snow, will look in the same thing.
You need a bit of brightness to a misty absolutely. Scene, otherwise it looks dingy, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, this is always a time when you want to be looking at your histogram as well, because you can see, you know, how far off the, you know, having the histogram nicely across on the right you are. And actually that will tell you how much you need to put a plus exposure compensation in. So you could put, as John says, a plus one in, have a look at the histogram. Have you gone far enough or not? So don't just rely on the back of the camera to say, yeah, I've got it about right. Check that histogram. Because the LCD panel is not a great way of understanding whether you've got that exposure right.
That is a really good point. You can't tell how bright or dark a picture is from the results on the LCD screen. I think all this, if we're shooting at night, when your eyes become more attuned to the darkness, you see the screen much brighter than it actually is, and you're probably only getting your histogram three quarters of the way across as a consequence. So that means all your night pictures are going to be horribly underexposed because your eyes were relying on the brightness of the screen to tell you about the brightness of the picture. Use that histogram. That's a really good tip.
But in that, here's a little tip. In that night situation, I'll always turn the LCD brightness down anyway.
Yes, that is a good idea. Yeah, because then it keeps it more in keeping with the conditions you're shooting in.
Well, yeah, yes, absolutely. Plus, on top of that, it means that you're not blinding yourself. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I mean, you can do it actually, not just at night. If you're in a hide, wildlife photographer in a hide, and you've got bright outside, you're shooting there, but of course you've got no light inside, back on, and suddenly you flick your LCD panel on just to check for composition, and this thing hits your eyes, and you're like, oh my God, nearly blinded. So, you know, it is well worth turning that up and down. I mean, you can put it, there is an auto setting for it actually, but I think it's better to set it yourself for the conditions that you're shooting.
Yeah, it's more
in.
Controllable, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, we've drifted off a bit. We've gone into sort of shooting in hides and shooting at night and all this kind of thing, but back to mist. One thing, if you have got those mist shots, don't discard them because they were underexposed, because if you shot them as raw files in particular, you can actually brighten up by quite a few stops and still get a good result. So put those into your software and push up the exposure value, and you'll find you've probably still got a decent result where you can get that brightness to the mist that you need.
Yeah, just watch out that you're not pushing too much noise into it from going from dark to light, which can happen, but of course you can nip that out as well if you really are careful in post-processing.
I will just say actually that you could say that we've given some tips on making the most of a missed opportunity.
Sorry, I was just listening for the tumbleweed.
Can you hear it yet?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, I've just checked my watch, and do you know what time it is?
No idea, John.
It's time for a very special feature in the Buzzcast.
Oh, good! My favourite bit of music that everybody loves.
It's the feature with the best jingle ever.
It is.
It's called Photo Vader.
So for this Photo Vader, I have a crawl streak, and that crawl streak means that I want people to get up really early in the morning, and I'm talking pre-dawn. Okay,
and we're in the summer at the moment, yes. So that is really cruel, isn't it?
Blinking early. And the reason is that actually the last couple of weeks, and I'm hoping that the next week or so too, we'll have some perfect conditions for shooting butterflies and other insects, and to get them at their least active, to get them when you can spend a little bit of time setting up and getting a really good shot, you need to be out early hunting for them in the grasses at a nature reserve or some local rural land, anywhere. Because what happens is a butterfly, for example, will come to settle down at night as it gets cold, and it will stay there. And as would a damselfly or a dragonfly, it will stay in that position until it warms up enough later on. And that means that if you can find them, and it's not always easy, but if you can find them in those conditions, and just as a light starts to come up, you can get some really good shots, because you can really play around, because they're not going to fly away. They're going nowhere. They're stuck in that position in a sort of suspended animation. So, but it does mean horrible time in the morning.
So horribly early start. And then in terms of lenses, I guess you're looking at either a macro lens, if you have one, so you can fill the frame with the little creature, or you could use the end of a telephoto zoom, something like that. So you could zoom into sort of 300 or even 400 and use the long end of your lens, because most long lenses and long zoom lenses will focus really close as well and give you a frame-filling portrait.
Yeah, pretty close. And actually, you don't necessarily have to have the insect filling the frame anyway, because you've got that bit of time to look at composition. You could get some really interesting stuff. I mean, for example, if you've got a butterfly resting on the end of a single kind of stem of grass, long grass or whatever, you can have that coming from the bottom corner and the butterfly relatively small, maybe backlit. Backlit would be, can look really good. So you could silhouette it, or you can expose it so that the background is when I say burning out, is a lot lighter than the foreground. Or the other alternative is that you introduce some light on the foreground when you've got a backlit scene as well. So, and there's lots of ways of doing that, isn't there?
I guess, yeah, you can use flash is the most obvious way. So you can use some flash. Or if you don't want to get that harsh effect that flash can sometimes have, you just need to bounce some light back. If you've got a light source in the background that you want to bounce into the foreground, you just need something that will reflect it. And obviously commercial reflectors, small sort of, luster light reflectors, that kind of thing, will do the job nicely. But anything you've got to hand, I mean, a white carrier bag, yeah. They're really good.
There's lots you can do with butterflies and insects at that time in the morning, if you can find them. One thing, and I remember making this mistake once, is if you're getting up early, it doesn't matter how, beautiful the last few days have been. If you're going to start walking through long grass, be aware that it's going to be wet. And if you're wearing jeans or something like that, it's not going to be particularly pleasant.
Put your wellies on, I think, is the answer for this one.
Yeah, wellies, or even just over trousers as well, because I've been soaked several times when I've gone up by basically not engaging my brain and thinking, oh, it's going to be a beautiful morning, blah blah blah. I'll go out and wade through all this grass, and then just you don't enjoy the shoot if you are completely soaked from the waist down.
Yeah, dew's going to look wonderful on your pictures, but it's going to feel pretty lousy on you.
Yeah, exactly. You know that now. You guys can get out. It'll be really nice to see some of your great butterfly pictures on PhotoBuzz.
That's it. And that's this month's Photovator. And it's also the end of this month's Buzzcast. We've covered a wide range of topics, from photo guilt in other countries,
plus photographing birds in flight,
and misty mornings.
And of course, I've been cruel enough to give you a Photovator that means you've got to get up at 4 a.m. And obviously, I will see you there.
Yeah, sure. I might just do the Photoshop stuff on those ones.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. Remember to leave your comments and your tips as well on the topics we've talked about in the comments below. So until next time, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me too.